close ties with the Israeli regime and are known for their hawkish stances against the rights of Palestinians. Trump's pick for ambassador to Israel is one of the examples. He has chosen Mike Huckabee for this position, someone who has long rejected a Palestinian state.
There is no such thing as a West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria. There's no such thing as a settlement. They're communities, they're neighborhoods, they're cities. There's no such thing as an occupation.
Trump has also nominated Florida Senator Marco Rubio, a persistent Israel supporter, to serve as Secretary of State. Rubio has taken a hawkish stance towards Israel's war on Gaza, which has killed tens of thousands of innocent civilians. He told an activist in 2023 on Capitol Hill that he does not support a ceasefire.
You call for ceasefire
in
Gaza.
On the contrary.
Rubio,
are you filming it?
Wait,
I want you guys to get this. I want them to destroy every element of Hamas they can get their hands on. These people are vicious animals who did horrifying crimes. And I hope you guys post that.
And
that's
what about
position.
The civilians that are being killed every day?
Hamas should stop hiding behind civilians, putting civilians in the way. Hamas knew that this was going to lead to this. So Hamas should stop building their military installations underneath hospitals.
So
underneath
you don't care that 15,000 have died? You don't care about the babies that are being killed every day?
I think it's horrifying.
Day.
I think it's terrible, and I think Hamas is 100% to blame.
On November 13, Trump named Pete Hegseth, a Fox News host and a war veteran, as his pick for Pentagon chief. He has called for unconditional U.S. support for the Israeli regime. In a 2016 interview, he said Israel should take advantage of Trump being in office to do what it needs to do in the region. Another candidate for the upcoming U.S. administration is Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. Trump has picked her for the position of the U.N. ambassador. Stefanik has repeatedly accused the U.N. of anti-Semitism for its criticism of Israel's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. In May, as Israel was bombing and starving civilians during a ground campaign in Rafah, she told a caucus in the Israel Knesset that the U.S. should supply Israel with whatever it needs.
As long as I serve the American people, I will defend George Washington's vision of religious pluralism and freedom. Today, this means crushing anti-Semitism at home and supplying the State of Israel with what it needs, when it needs it, without conditions to achieve total victory in the face of evil.
In the lead-up to Election Day on November 5, Trump campaigned heavily as an anti-war candidate, blaming outgoing President Joe Biden for the international conflicts that erupted during his tenure. However, it is becoming increasingly clear that his pledge to end wars in Gaza and Lebanon was nothing more than an empty promise and a strategy to gain votes. Many now believe that his cabinet nominees hint at what some critics fear from a second Trump administration. That he will go further than President Biden in his support for Israel.
Let me introduce our guest for this edition of the Spotlight. Joining us first is Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern is a former CIA analyst who joins us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Also joining us is Ashish Prashar, who is a former advisor to the U.S. West Asia envoy from New York.
Is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Ray McGovern, let me start with you. So we have a list of the President-elect Trump's picks that we're going to pick apart, so to speak. And I put Mike Huckabee as the first choice here. Would you like to start with that one or not? I can go down the list. Which one do you think ranks higher?
I'm already quite depressed by that list. Let me explain, though, why I have a keffiyeh on. I do not represent any outlet or even my own website. I am an American. I am appalled at our genocide. And so I'm remembering the words of Archbishop Tutu, who said, "He who remains neutral in times like these has chosen the side of the oppressor. I choose the side of not the oppressor." In answer to your question with respect to Mike Huckabee, he is the epitome of an ignorant Christian Zionist who thinks that God is a real estate agent and has given territory long occupied by Palestine to the Jewish people. There could not be a more crass or more, well, a more dumb pick for an ambassador to Israel than Huckabee, but he, of course, follows a long line of such people. And Trump, I guess the only saving grace, the only slice of hope, in my view, is that Elon Musk met with Iran's ambassador to the UN earlier this week. I don't know what they discussed, but I am hopeful that early reports that Musk was trying to tamp down the possibility that, for example, Iran would start working on a nuclear weapon rather than just nuclear material. I hope that Iran will not rise to the bait here and give Bibi Netanyahu a pretext to do worse than he has already done.
Yeah, that's not a line, even though much has been in the news about that, that Iran has confirmed. But I find it interesting that our guest star, Ashish Prashar, talked about the keffiyeh, and he brought about the notion that should be the theme of the whole Palestine issue at this point, which is the genocide taking place. And I'd like to ask you how it is that you have these picks, of which many are what's called evangelical Christians. And as a Christian, a religion that's supposed to promote peace, that they are supporting a genocide. And we do have to go through some of these picks, mind you, but I was going to do that at the end of the program, but I'm going to start off with that because some of them are just that. But then how is it that you can be a Christian and support this genocide?
Well, so I have a slightly different view to my colleague on this. I just think Trump holds a mirror up to America, right? Does policy change because of these individuals who he's appointed? He's just showing the true ugly nature of American foreign policy with picks like Marco Rubio, Elise Stefanik, and frankly, all of them. Like you said, Mike Huckabee, I mean, the guy has no clue about foreign policy or anything else. But he's a Christian Zionist. But he's showing the true face of American foreign policy for all its ugly red for the last 50, 60 years. The reality is that, you know, just because someone like Anthony Blinken went to the right schools or plays a guitar with Bruce Springsteen, is he less of a war criminal or a dangerous person than Marco Rubio and those comments he made about kids in Gaza? You know, if you think about someone like Blinken, for example, who's been our Secretary of State, is still, by the way, our Secretary of State, it could end this. His grandfather founded the American-Palestinian Institute, an organization that, you know, furthered the Zionist colonial project. He also said Obama failed in Syria because he didn't bomb Syria out of existence. And this is a guy who's been a warmonger his whole life and been anti-Arab, anti-Palestinian. But I guess he didn't say some offhand comments or isn't as racist publicly. Is he any better than Marco Rubio or any of the other members of these picks that Trump's made in the last few days? Yes, people probably are looking to Trump to do something differently. All he's doing is just showing America for what it is. You know, people are worried about, because of Mike Huckabee and Marco Rubio, that there's going to be annexation of the West Bank. Can you tell me, from President Obama through to President Trump and, again, Joe Biden, has anyone tried to stop the annexation of the West Bank, which has been going on for the last decade and a bit? I mean, the aggressiveness has definitely turned up under the Biden administration. But, you know, the only reason we've seen the Biden administration put some sanctions on settlers is because Gaza had focused on it. People were annexing the West Bank and settling on it in all the way up to October 7th, and the administration did nothing because it kind of approved of it. Trump will just annex it. That's the difference. He's going to show the ugly face of American foreign policy with these picks, but also his own policy. Now, I do agree with Ray that I don't think he wants boots on the ground. I don't think he wants a war with Iran. He doesn't want to get dragged into something because his base definitely is less of a, it's definitely got an anti-war element in it. And I believe that he will do everything to avert that because he wants to be this great peacemaker. And a little bit of this reminds me of when Reagan took office after Jimmy Carter. And a lot, and this is all publicly disclosed now, but Reagan's back-channeling with Iran on that was okay. to keep the hostages in place. And Reagan then had them released on Inauguration Day. So Trump, I feel like on Inauguration Day, wants some big wins, right? Similar to Reagan. Maybe he wants Bibi to tamper it down. Maybe he says there's not going to be any more aggression. It might be temporary because of Bibi's ambitions.
Sure.
But I think he wants a big win in the region early in his picks.
Let's pick up on that point about the annexation of the occupied West Bank, Ray McGovern. I mean, is there anything left there for annexation, or is it annexed already, and we're just really dealing with what has been an unfortunate result of the U.S. policy allowing Israel to do that? Because Mike Huckabee has said the full Israeli annexation of the occupied West Bank will be possible under the next Trump administration. He chose his words carefully there. Do you think that it's going to happen, Ray McGovern?
Well, Trump blessed the Israeli annexation of the Golan Heights against all international law. What's to prevent him from blessing the annexation of the West Bank, except for the fact that there were more than 1 million Palestinians living there? It's gotten worse. But unless Israel is prepared to exterminate, to do genocide in the West Bank as well, and unless it's enabled to do that by, I'm sorry to say, our country, the United States of America, well, if that happens, then, you know, Bibi Netanyahu will have achieved his aim. Now, I would kind of emphasize this fact. Netanyahu militarily is losing on all fronts. Gaza? Lebanon, he's losing the battle within his government. I don't know how long he's going to last, and so this is not good news, as it would appear apparently at first blush. He's desperate. What will he do? Well, my guess is that he will advertise that Iran is now working on a nuclear weapon, and that in just 2 weeks' time, they will have one. And so Israel has to do a preemptive attack. What will Trump and his cronies, his Zionist and Christian Zionist cronies, do at that point? That's the real problem. Now, what I hope that Elon Musk learned from Iran's ambassador at the UN is that Iran has not reversed the fatwa against nuclear weapons, that has no intention of doing that, and that the pretext that likely Netanyahu is going to raise is based, as usual, on false facts. So let's hope that's the case. Let's hope that Trump really doesn't want to get involved in a war with Iran. And let's hope, most of all, that the people he has now appointed won't mousetrap him, and Bibi Netanyahu will not mousetrap him into a situation where he feels he has to come to Israel's aid, no matter genocide, no matter what.
I'm going to push that down a little bit further into the program to get into that topic, since we have to discuss at least a little bit more than just one of those picks. And my next pick here is Elsie Stefanik, the pick for the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and Ashia, I'd like to get your, reaction to that. What I find from her that's very interesting is that she has said the U.S. should supply Israel with what it needs, when it needs it, without conditions, in order to achieve a total victory. It kind of overlaps some of the other picks also. And the deduction made there is that she supports the U.S.-Israeli genocide against the Palestinians. Do you read it that way also?
I mean, yes. I mean, if you go down 98% of Congress, I'm sure you'd find half of them are funded by AIPAC and the rest of them have pledged some sort of form of allegiance to Israel by saying it has the right to self-defense and will keep funding the Iron Dome and pass these $25 billion. I mean, some of it's been passed by the executive office, but, you know, has not blocked any of the weapons transfers. I think she's just on par with every other American in the Senate or Congress right now. The reality is that she, again, says it out loud. She says her opinion. I think she's been rewarded. for doing overreach of an anti-Semitism witch hunt in the United States, where she bullied university presidents and professors into shutting down, peaceful camps in solidarity with the Palestinians on college campuses. And that's what she's been rewarded with, a position that, frankly, to me, is meaningless in the UN. I mean, the US has basically said that they're not going to listen to the UN on anything. She's been rewarded with a diplomatic position that looks high profile in its rank. But, the UN has been a powerless body since Iraq, the illegal Iraq invasion. And I believe she's just been rewarded. I don't think she's going to have any real say over anything similar to Nikki Haley or Linda Greenfield right now. I think they just literally are a token diplomat. So it's a lot of verbiage. It's a lot of, I think, Trump giving his biggest funder what she wants, Miriam Edelson, who's donated $100-odd million to his campaign. She could not have dreamed better picks with Rubio, Huckabee, Elise, and others. I mean, this is her perfect cabinet. But I still think foreign policy will still run through Trump, similar to his first term. I think he wants to build his own reputation, quote-unquote legacy, whatever that means nowadays to politicians. But I think a lot of his decision-making, similar to when he engaged with North Korea and everything, is his decision-making.
Sure.
It's not going to be these people. And I'll give you another example quickly on this. This is Rubio. Everyone worries that Marco Rubio is going to start like a war or even a trade war with China. A lot of that is rhetoric. And the reason I'll bring that to this conversation quickly is that, a lot of people talked about the Trump transition team. It involves his chief of staff, Susie Wiles. It involves J.D. Vance. It involves Howard Lutnick. The other person at that table, which your colleague Ray has mentioned a couple of times, is Elon Musk. Elon Musk makes over the majority of his electricity, Tesla money from China. And if that man is in Trump's ear and he is advising him on some of these picks, do you think Marco Rubio is going to be allowed to even start like that economic war with China? It shows you that a lot of these picks are there for presentation, not necessarily action on everything.
Well, that's a good point here. So Ray McGovern, I mean, anybody listening to this program might think, these picks were because they are all pro-Israel and anti-Palestinian. But I'm almost sure that you'll agree that that's not obviously what credentials Trump looked at in order to pick them. So are we looking at the fact that we're just looking at loyalists and these are merely, well, I don't know if I should say this, pawns that Trump has in his hands that he will get information from, but ultimately he will be the decision maker?
Well, it's actually, in my view, a distinction without a difference. Trump loyalists are ipso facto Zionists, just as bad as the chief Zionist, Joe Biden. You showed a clip of the Defense Department spokesperson there just a minute ago. It reminded me to point out a very critical factor. Our military, the U.S. military, and to an extent even the Israeli military, are showing some sense and some guts, some cojones, if you will. They stopped Trump from blessing Blinken's idea. They stopped Biden from blessing Blinken's idea to attack further, deeper into Russia. Will they stand up now? I think the Israeli military is talking to our military and saying, look, we don't want any part of a war against Iran. And so I think our military, having shown its courage recently with respect to to Ukraine, would be prepared to step in and say, Mr. Trump, this is not going to work out very well. We've had very bad success. And besides, Iran has things like, they have things like the hypersonic missiles, which we're still trying to develop. They have the upper hand. They can destroy Israel. So let's not get mousetrapped by Netanyahu into supporting a war against Iran on false pretenses, which it would have to be because Iran, in my view, doesn't want any part of a war with Israel or anyone else at this point.
All right. The Secretary of Defense pick is, I think, worth also talking about here since we're quickly running out of time. Ashish, we're looking at Pete Hegseth, evangelical Christian, sees in Israel. This came out a couple hours back, so I put it in here. He sees in Israel the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. uses the Bible in support of U.S. Israeli genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. What does that mean, really? Is he really following that vantage point or approach that it made it in the news for me to come here and ask you that question?
I mean, a lot of Christian Zionists in America believe the biblical prophecy, right? They believe this evangelical trend in the United States, which believes that the Israelis need to settle that the entire Judea Samaria, and you know, the second coming will happen, and a third of Jews will convert to Christian, become Christian. The rest will die. I mean, if people who are Jewish and who are Israeli want to die on behalf of evangelical people in church in America, well, there's your ally, right? He wants to make sure you die to, you know, to fulfill a random prophecy in a book. So I would say, with respect to him, he is probably someone that Trump feels like is tough because he's been on TV and has been a soldier. You know, he has a crusade quote on his body that he has shown a few times. I think the matter of the crusades was resolved 750 years ago when they were found that they were a really bad idea. So I do think hopefully there'll be generals and military professionals in the Defense Department who will give President Donald Trump better advice than this Fox News personality crusade reading, you know, obsessive Christian evangelical. I don't think he's going to give him any sound advice. It'll be the generals around the table that will have to weigh in. I would also add that, though, if you're looking at like his wanting to, you know, bomb the Middle East, it doesn't, again, hasn't changed with any other defense secretary we've had, right? Lloyd Austin has okayed all these weapons transfers, you know, predecessors before him in the Trump administration and even the Obama administration have been at war, if not through drones, with peer personnel and missiles and bombs than everyone before them. And this goes all the way back to Bill Clinton, right? Where in the first Iraq war, the Assistant Defense Department aggression towards people in the Middle East hasn't changed. One just has a crusader tattoo and the others are, again, a bit more professional, if we're going to use that term. Their ideology doesn't change.
All right. One last question. Ray McGovern, one is said to, if interested to find out what Trump's thinking is when it comes to West Asia in particular, is to look at the trade corridors. You're looking at that corridor that the Israeli Prime Minister talked about from India to Israel, Saudi Arabia through Israel, that will connect to Europe. And also we're looking at the gas fields off the Gaza Strip, for example. Trump is a businessman. Do you think that he wants a West Asia region that is filled with wars and destruction and devastation? Or does he want one that would aid him in fulfilling those trade route corridors?
When you talk about trade route corridors, you're talking about China as well.
And to undermine China.
China depends immensely on the availability of maybe about 20% of its oil from the Persian Gulf area. So what the new situation is that Iran has the equivalent of allies in Russia and in China. And so trade corridors, well, the ones that they want to protect are the Persian Gulf trade corridors. And what happens in the rest of the Middle East, particularly with respect to the gas deposits off Gaza, well, that's another matter that they're less concerned about. I would like to quote, let's close with one sentence quote from the UN senior human rights person who quit in October of last year, right after he saw what was happening. His name is Craig McKeiber. And what he says is relevant to this whole discussion because it started with genocide, it should end with genocide. If Israel, quote, if Israel gets its way with genocide, all the nascent project of the world governed by human rights and the rule of law crumbles. And then it's every person and every country for themselves. My God, that goes back to 1648, before the Christians and before they stopped those wars in Europe.
Very well. We're going to end it on that. Ray McGovern, thank you for that. Former CIA analyst, Raleigh, North Carolina. Sheesh Prashar, former advisor to U.S. West Asia envoy from New York. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tagway and the team, it's goodbye.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the contents and commentaries of chapter Qasas, the 28th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back with you after you listen to some of the verses of this chapter we're going to talk about in this program.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
طاسين
طاسين ميم
تلك آيات الكتاب المبين.
These are verses of the clear book.
نَتْلُو عَلَيْكَ مِنْ نَبَإِ مُوسَى وَفِرْعَوْنَ بِالْحَقِّ لِقَوْمٍ يُؤْمِنُونَ.
We recite to you from the news of Moses and Pharaoh in truth for a people who believe.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing the third verse of chapter Qasas, and it says that we are going to mention to you some of the parts of the story of Moses and Pharaoh in truth for a people who believe. Now, regarding this verse, the very beginning thing we said we have to note is the fact that it starts saying, نَتْلُ عَلَيْكَ مِنْ نَبَئِ مُوسَى. We are going to recite to you only a part of the story. This min points to the fact that this is whatever is mentioned in this chapter is only a part of what has happened throughout the history. So, in this regard, we can mention the fact that different verses of the Holy Quran are pointing to the story of Prophet Moses, but it seems that the Holy Quran has had different approaches regarding specific parts of the story or specific aspects of the story of Prophet Moses. And wherever deemed necessary, this part is brought up and mentioned by the Holy Quran. So, this verse, as you may have noted, says, نَتْلُوا عَلَيْكَ مِنْ نَبَئِ مُوسَى وَفِرْعَوْنَ بِالْحَقِّ. And the application of the word بِالْحَقِّ, in truth, in these verses, points to the fact that whatever has been mentioned here is free from any superstition, free from any kind of content made in the old fables and false matters. It is a recitation with truth and exact reality. It is implicitly mentioning that there are some different versions of the story of Prophet Moses which are filled with superstitions, which are filled with false matters, and this makes hard for you to distinguish from the truth and untruth. So, the application of the phrase لِقَوْمٍ يُؤْمِنُونَ after, right after the word بِالْحَقِّ, for people who believe, is an emphasis on this fact, that those believers who were under pressure at the time in Mecca, like and the like of them, should reach to this fact by hearing this story, that how abundant the enemy's power, number of persons, and their forces is, and how the number of believers is apparently little, and they are under pressure, the power of Allah is the one that has the power. The power of Allah is above all. They must not feel weakness in themselves. So this is only one simple responsibility of such verse. So, dear listeners, regarding this third verse of chapter Qasas, up to now we have mentioned a couple of points. The first is the application of the word min that points to the fact that whatever is mentioned in this chapter is only a part of the concerning adventures of Moses and Pharaoh. Now, also the application of the word bilhaq points to the very fact that there are some different versions of the stories regarding Prophet Moses that are actually mixed with unrealities, which are mixed with superstitions. And also, the last point, which is the most important, I think, is the application of the phrase لِقَوْمٍ يُؤْمِنُونَ, because this verse was revealed when there were some people under pressure at that time in Mecca. So these people are the very ones that should reach the true meanings of these verses. Why? Because they were truly under pressure in Mecca, and they were facing many difficulties at that time. Now, what will happen if they hear about a prophet, a divine prophet that had many people being under oppression at that time? The people of Moses had many problems. They had faced many difficulties, and the true believers to Moses were the ones that actually gained power. So they have to note the fact that they must not feel weakness in themselves. The Lord who caused Moses to be brought up in the bosom of Pharaoh to destroy him, this is the Lord who made the oppressed slaves as the governors on earth. He was the one who made the cruel oppressors abject, mean, and annihilated, actually. This is the kind of Lord who protected a little baby in the rushing waves of water. This is the one who buried thousands of thousands strong people of Pharaoh inside the sea. And this is the very Lord who is able to save you. There is no different Lord. This is exactly that very Lord. So the main target of these verses is the believers. لِقَوْمٍ يُؤْمِنُونَ, the verse says. And this recitation has been accomplished for them. Yes, they are the believers. They are the ones who can be actually inspired, who can be enlivened by these verses. They are the ones who will find their way to the aim among the mass of difficulties. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
One sleepless night, my window broke. My olive tree went up in smoke. I heard the children scream. I heard the war drum beat. Gunpowder in the air, dead bodies on the street. It won't take long for the dark clouds to go, for the sun to come out and shine on my home. They raised their flag in blue and white, erected walls in broad daylight. They walked with tanks, they spoke with guns, they thought they were God's chosen ones. They didn't know inside me is a soul that never gives up. Resistance is my key to a door locked up. Oh, oh, my hope. Sing this song, Palestine is where I belong. It won't take long for the dark clouds to go, for the sun to come out and shine on my home.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahan Abbott, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Another pro-Palestine rally in the South Korean capital. Protest chants demanding the liberation of Palestine echoed across downtown Seoul on Saturday. Many young people participated in the rally ahead of International Children's Day, November the 20th. Even in grade 5, Chun Shiwan understands the harsh reality of Israeli atrocities and the Americans' complicity.
We must condemn Israel, and when we condemn Israel, we must also condemn the United States, because the United States has been providing Israel with weapons and bombs and helps the regime slaughter innocent civilians. And therefore, the United States is also a terrorist.
Supporters of Palestine here were recently called in for questioning by South Korean prosecutors, just like pro-Palestine activists are targeted in Europe.
We are now living in an unprecedented time of expression of global support for the liberation of Palestine. Criminalizing our voice will not quiet it. Let our voice be louder than the voice of the oppressor.
The facts of Israel's atrocities cannot be denied.
A recent report by a special committee of the United Nations released on Thursday puts on the record what supporters of Palestinians have been stating for several months. Israel, through its indiscriminate assaults and obstruction of aid, is, quote, using starvation as a weapon of war, imposing collective punishment on the Palestinian people.
The UN report also said the term genocide may apply. International activists want to help Palestinians stay strong.
Palestinians have been resisting Israeli occupation for the past 76 years and suffering genocide for over a year. These demonstrations around the world will make Palestinians understand they are not alone, and we are together in fighting for the human rights of the Palestinian people.
More civic actions are planned, including International Human Rights Day, December 8th. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Nurses and midwives in Sydney organized a weekend fundraiser to support those affected by the ongoing conflict in Gaza and Lebanon. The event sought to raise essential funds, offering much-needed aid and relief to war-stricken communities.
The West's silence and complicity in the Israeli war crimes committed in Palestine and Lebanon have driven people to seek alternative ways to support these oppressed. This event is one such initiative by Australians.
Scores of small businesses owned by Palestinian Australians and Lebanese Australians joined the fundraising campaign, contributing to the effort with unwavering dedication. Business owners emphasized the importance of collective action, stating that every effort, no matter how small, is vital in supporting what is just and right.
We need these events to bring us all together, just as human beings who can see something wrong, want to keep identifying that it's wrong, and want to keep that narrative in the front of the community's minds, not allow the media and the government to bury these issues.
Mohammed Zarka, a Palestinian Australian who owns a popular kanafa business in Sydney, has a deeply personal connection to the cause. His grandfather was forced out of Jerusalem during the Nakba, leaving the family to live in various countries, but never in their homeland.
Very proud.
In an emotional journey to reconnect with his roots, Mohammed Zarka visited his ancestral home in Palestine. While his grandfather's house and orange tree still stands, he was not allowed to pick its fruit.
My grandfather told me there's a tree there he planted when he was young. It's an orange tree. So I went inside to look for it. So I found it, this big orange tree. And I found, wow, that's the one. So I grabbed some of the orange I want to bring back to my grandfather. And the lady came up to me, she said, oh, you're stealing my orange. I said, hello, this is not your orange. That's my orange. It's my grandfather's orange tree.
Mohammed remains hopeful, believing that one day Palestine will be free.
She said, please, please, come in, go, come out. I said, okay, wait. I want to hug that tree. So I hugged the tree, I kissed the tree, and I talked to the tree. I said, darling, it's okay. I'm coming back soon.
Since October 2023, weekend events in support of Gaza and Lebanon have become a powerful and consistent movement across Australia. Humanitarian groups are leaving no stone unturned, from advocating for sanctions against Israel to raising critical funds for aid. Their collective efforts reflecting a growing demand for justice and unwavering solidarity with those impacted by the ongoing conflict. Shahana Bhatt, Sydney.
Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis gathered for another Friday of pro-Palestinian demonstrations, filling the streets of the capital Sana'a and cities and towns across the country. The message at the rally in Sana'a was resolute. Yemen stands ready for an all-out confrontation with the United States if its attacks on Yemen continue. This declaration comes after a week of intense U.S. airstrikes, which Yemeni forces countered by targeting three U.S. warships in nearby waters.
The Yemeni army, which adheres to the Holy Quran, countered the U.S. warships with full conviction and steadfastness in surrounding waters. We also targeted U.S. aircraft carrier, which no other country has done. These U.S. warships and aircraft failed to instill fear in the people who adhere to Quran.
Protesters also condemned the recent Arab and Islamic summit, criticizing the Arab leaders for failing to take any meaningful actions against Israel's genocide in Gaza and the aggression on Lebanon.
The Arab and Islamic summit concluded with no results. They did not utter a single word against the Israeli regime and the U.S. This is because they themselves are Zionists and even worse. They are nothing. By the will of Allah, we will be the ones to face U.S. and Israel.
For over 13 months, weekly protests across Yemen have manifested a nation's determination to resist foreign aggression and support the Palestinian cause, no matter the price. The Ansar Allah leader has declared that the solution for Palestine will not come from the Arab and Islamic summit. It will come from the Quran, which obliges Muslims to mobilize militarily in order to liberate the Holy Land. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Ali Larijani, senior advisor to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, reiterated in a visit to the Lebanese capital, Beirut, Iran's support for Lebanon.
We are not trying to blow up any efforts, but we want to solve the problem, and we will stand by Lebanon, whatever the circumstances. It is Netanyahu and his supporters who are destroying all efforts for a ceasefire. I call on the Lebanese to differentiate between their friends and enemies.
Larijani said he hoped circumstances would soon improve in Lebanon so that displaced people could return home. These remarks came after Larijani met with Speaker of the Lebanese Parliament, Nabih Berri, who has been the primary negotiator in talks for a ceasefire. Berri has stressed to visitors that no matter what the U.S. proposal includes, Lebanon will not surrender sovereignty over its country. Earlier, Larijani met with caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati, who told him that Lebanon wants the war to end and that talks are ongoing to reach a ceasefire. Also, various other political faction leaders met with the Iranian official at the embassy in Beirut.
This is a very important visit since it stresses a message of support for Lebanon, the government and resistance to help it face the challenges, whether it to do with the battlefield or the challenges of the political complexities that the Lebanese negotiators are facing.
Larijani told the Lebanese officials that the Islamic Republic of Iran supports any decision made by the government of Lebanon and its call for the implementation of Resolution 1701. Senior advisor to Iran's leader has stressed that the main objective of his visit is to show Iran's support for Lebanon, the government, and the people, especially in light of this very critical period and the continuous Israeli atrocities on the country. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
A special committee of the UN's Human Rights Office says Israel's war in Gaza is consistent with the characteristics of genocide. In its latest report, it pointed to mass civilian casualties and life-threatening conditions intentionally imposed by Israel on Palestinians since October 7 last year.
The developments in this report led this special committee to conclude that the policies and practices of Israel are consistent with the characteristics of genocide. The targeting of Palestinians as a group, the life-threatening conditions imposed on Palestinians in Gaza through warfare and restrictions on humanitarian aid resulting in physical destruction, increased miscarriages, and stillbirth are violations under international law. Civilians have been indiscriminately and disproportionately killed en masse in Gaza.
The UN committee criticized the regime for destroying vital water and sanitation systems, contaminating the environment, and inflicting long-term harm on future generations. The report highlighted that Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. This is consistent with findings from the UN's Famine Review Committee, which warns that famine may already be occurring in Gaza.
Already in October, nearly 133,000 people faced catastrophic food insecurity. And the integrated phase, food security phase classification released on 17th of October warned that under a reasonable worst-case scenario, a risk of famine existed for the whole of the Gaza Strip between November 2024 and April 2025.
The United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees has raised urgent alarms about the looming threat of famine in northern Gaza, highlighting the severe humanitarian crisis that continues to unfold in the besieged strip.
Famine is imminent, if not already happening, in the besieged north. And while we receive testimonies from people on the ground asking, begging for pieces of bread, for water, the United Nations remains denied access to this area.
As the humanitarian crisis deepens in Gaza, the world continues to stay silent over the Israeli genocide. The need for immediate intervention has never been more pressing now as the lives of countless civilians hang in the balance amid U.S.-Israeli genocidal war.
With the spotlight on medical experiences in the occupied Palestine, the 4th Congress on Trauma, held in Tehran, brought together a diverse group of medical professionals, including doctors, nurses, and researchers.
2 days Congress, including 18 sessions, in particular a special session regarding trauma in Gaza, and we would like to present our experience regarding trauma in the war.
The Iranian medical community has shown a genuine concern for the traumatic conditions faced by the people, physicians, and paramedics in Gaza, despite the fact that the international community has largely ignored the ongoing humanitarian crisis there.
Gaza has been the site of one of the largest conflicts, revealing a deeply traumatizing reality. We felt it was essential to honor the physicians and paramedics who sacrificed their lives on the battlefield.
Regarding the Israeli war on Gaza and Lebanon, I can say that we have international relations with doctors in both regions via teleconference. We will also discuss how trauma can be prevented and treated, particularly considering the daily trauma experienced by the oppressed children of Gaza.
As medical professionals dedicated to saving lives, we find it inconceivable. Explosives were discovered in tools and equipment. Pagers designed by the Israeli regime blinded hundreds of Lebanese.
Iranian hospitals have always been ready to help, and the healthcare assistance they offer this time is no different.
The injured brought to Iran after the pager blast received full coverage by the Iranian healthcare system. Appropriate actions were taken for them. Iranian hospitals treated over 500 injured Lebanese people.
In its genocidal war on Gaza and Lebanon, Israel has not spared even hospitals, leading to a tsunami of trauma among the people, medical professionals, paramedics, and most importantly, children. The Trauma Congress is an opportunity to discuss exactly that.
The ongoing conflict in Gaza has resulted in significant devastation to the healthcare infrastructure. Conferences like this, centered on Gaza's health conditions, can raise global awareness of the dire humanitarian crisis in the blockaded territory. Mehdi Nourouzi, Tehran.
The future of peace and human rights in West Asia is the theme of an international conference held in the Iranian capital, Tehran, featuring diplomatic and scholarly guests from around the globe. This event addresses the ongoing developments in both the region and the world at large. Organized by an Iranian NGO dedicated to clarifying Iran's commitment to global peace, the conference aims to provide different perspectives regarding peace and human rights.
In response to media attacks and accusations against our country, we are organizing peace conferences through a non-governmental organization to highlight the Islamic Republic's commitment to peace.
The participants underscored that many international structures were created in the aftermath of World War II to address the needs of that era. But it is crucial for these frameworks to become adapted to contemporary realities. Additionally, the ongoing conflicts in Gaza and Lebanon were significant themes in the guests' presentations.
I stressed in my statement that
regional issues should be solved by regional players, and peace should be sustained by the regional players, not by the external players.
Peace in West Asia is fragile. While some advocate for peace building through international law and institutions like the UN, Israel's violations of UN resolutions undermine the effectiveness of such approaches in the region.
The conference also offered speakers a platform to criticize the security arrangements in the West Asia region, expressing that they need significant reform. In this conference, Israel's presence in West Asia was identified as a major contributing factor to the ongoing instability and tensions, referred to as the main reason behind the current state of unrest in the region. Farzan Ashuryun, Tehran.
To some, France is standing idly by as Gaza and its population are destroyed by what many consider to be Israeli genocide. Tabiazi is a Palestinian refugee from Gaza.
What I want from the French government and what I want from the French people and all of the world, just to give the Palestinians the same human rights. The Palestinians want to be free, just want to be has their freedom.
I want the French government to stop completely cut all ties with Israel. I want the French government to recognize Palestine. I want the French government to stop being hypocrites and actually play a role in making the change.
Harsh words calling for tough actions, which are unlikely to be taken up by the government here. As Israeli artillery continues to pound Gaza and parts of South Lebanon, France says it no longer supplies Israelis with the military equipment being used on those two fronts. A statement met with skepticism by some. The visit of the highly controversial Israeli minister Bezalel Smotrich for a private gala seems set to go ahead, as does a football match later this week between France and Israel.
While sports are often seen as a unifying factor, this match is now under scrutiny as a potential flashpoint of unrest and protest, especially given the current situation in Lebanon and Palestine. Peter Hume at the Stade de France near Paris.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Desire and Hope. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Sister Zainab for A to Z on Iran Radio, and I'm speaking to you about desire and hope, and you might think, oh, well, what does that mean? So what I mean is that we need to do two things as believers. So on the one side, we need to make sure that we're not too controlled, too overpowered, too focused just on our desires. And at the same time, we shouldn't have this idea that we can have sort of inordinate hope, so this massive hope for whatever it is we want. And maybe if I give you a hadith narration from Imam Ali, you understand more what I mean by that. So Imam Ali is reported to have said that, "I'm apprehensive for you on account of two things, so submission to desire and cherishing of inordinate hope." He then also says, "As to desire, it prevents one from haq, or truth, and as to inordinate hope, it makes man oblivious of the hereafter." So obviously, basically, this means, okay, so we cannot be ruled by our desires, and at the same time, we also, and this is why they fit together, and we also can't be ruled by whatever insatiable hopes we have. And obviously, you can imagine if we're only following our desires, there's very little space in our mind or in our heart for divine knowledge. And it actually says that. So we're